The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
You can WhatsApp us this morning, 087 1400 106, or email clarebyrne@newstalk.com. But first, I'm joined now in the studio by Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin Deputy Leader, Finance Spokesperson and TD for Donegal. You're welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Claire.
And thank you for coming in. The first thing I want to talk to you about, and we see the scenes playing out here on the TV screen in front of us, what happened in Belfast overnight after a Sudanese man was charged with attempted murder. And we heard in the first hour of the programme about gangs of young men going around beating down the doors of houses, breaking windows, dragging families outside, threatening and in some cases burning houses out, and children being taken to stay overnight. We don't know where, but they've no home to go back to. What do you make of it all?
I think it's appalling. I think anybody who's watched the scenes in Belfast over the last, 48 hours are really, really shocked. First, you have obviously that attack, that attempted murder, and conscious that somebody's before the courts today, which was absolutely horrific and really, really scary. And people are right to be disgusted and outraged at that happening in the streets anywhere in our island. But that doesn't give people the license to do what they did last night. And what happened last night was just absolutely appalling. It has to be condemned from the highest level. We've seen the destruction of property, the destruction of our public service infrastructure in the north. We've seen businesses being burnt out. And the worst scenes of all was people, masked men, walking the streets, going door to door and burning houses out. And they are images that I've seen in the past, from times back in history, back to, the 1969 when nationalists were burnt from their homes in the pogroms. And they are things that everybody thought was left behind them. The only difference today is that it wasn't people looking for Catholics or Irish. It was people looking for somebody with a different colour of skin. And it's simply unacceptable to stoke up that fear, that tension and that hatred in the north. And we need community leaders now to stand up and make sure that is not happening tonight, the police now need to prosecute those involved.
Community leaders, the police, the politicians, they're one thing and they're saying one thing, and we saw them yesterday calling on people not to do this. Social media companies, have to be held to account here as well. Elon Musk, Tommy Robinson and others encouraged that last night.
Well, I think it's clear that there's social media is the platform that a lot of this is organised, and through other kind of messaging platforms as well. I heard a reporter who reports on the North speaking today and saying that the same pages that were encouraging people to protest and riot during the flags protest, because the Union Jack wasn't flying over Belfast City Hall, and also the Brexit protests were the same pages that were activated to rally people to the streets, which were in predominantly, they're in loyalist communities. We haven't seen nationalist communities rise in that way. Obviously, they are disgusted at the attack that happened in North Belfast like anybody else, but they haven't went out and destroyed their communities and used it as an excuse
Alison Morris was on
to spread hatred.
Was on with us at 9, and Alison said that a lot of the accounts she could see today calling for violence were American accounts with Irish flags on them, calling on people to go out onto the streets. And it's an absolute frustration, isn't it? That those social media companies who are hosting those accounts, who are riling people up, driving them out onto the streets, they're never going to be in court. They're never going to have to pay for this.
There is a big issue in terms of social media. We've seen it in terms of our own party in Sinn Féin. There's independent analysis that's been done. I don't know who did it a couple of years ago. Lynn Boylan, I seen her share it a while back, showing how many kind of tweets were targeted, negative tweets were targeted at Sinn Féin, and where they were orchestrated, and they were orchestrated outside the country. And we're talking about millions and millions of tweets. So there is interference, there is no doubt, in terms of politics. There's also people who are trying to stoke up tension. But there is also responsibility, and I'm not absolving the social media companies from this at all, but there is also responsibility on the ground to make sure that young people, in particular young people, are not dragged into this type of hate, this type of fear, and being used in this manner. There is no doubt that we will now see prosecutions. People will be sentenced. People may go to prison as a result of what happened. Like, this was not, a bit of crack where young people were out. There was a bus burned to the ground. It was €1 million. There was people's houses, like, going door to door, knocking to see if you had a different tone of skin colour. to burn your house out is something that I didn't think I would see anywhere in this country. And it has to be stopped. So people will now face serious consequences as a result of that. Many of the people I've seen on social media were masked. There was some people that weren't masked. And there's no doubt it'll take a couple of days, but the PSNI will prosecute them, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm. People have asked questions about Sinn Féin's position on immigration. Can I ask you about the EU Migration and Asylum Pact? Because in that, there is a provision that people can be sent to third countries, to countries that they have never, they've no connection with, they've never visited before, and detained. Do you agree with that?
Oh, no, we don't agree with the EU Migration Pact in the first instance. So just let me be clear in relation to that. We forced the vote in relation to that pact 2 years ago, and again yesterday, looking for a debate in relation to it. The reason we don't agree with it is we believe that Ireland is best served by deciding our own migration policies. We are unique. We're not France. We're not Spain. We are on an island that is partitioned. We share a common travel area with Britain, which is outside the European Union. And the idea that we would hand over these powers to Europe to decide what is in our interest in terms of migration is absolutely wrong. We have to decide ourselves where what the best position, the best way that we handle migration, and migration needs to be controlled and it needs to be enforced, and there needs to be cooperation with other jurisdictions, including Europe, but particularly in terms of Britain because of the common travel area. So there's parts of...
But there'll be people texting this programme who will agree with a lot of the measures in that pact, including the one to have ICE-style raids on workplaces and homes, detention provisions for up to 30 months for people who are not allowed to stay here.
The issue here isn't about, just in terms of the pact, the issue here isn't in terms of what the pact is going to be or what the pact may be in the future or what, now that we've opted into this, what Europe may decide and tell us that we have to do. The issue here is that we can do all of this ourselves. So everything that you've said, if you wanted to, if an Irish government wanted to do that, they could do it themselves. So, you know, you hear the government saying, oh, this will help us to actually process individuals within 6 months. There is nothing stopping the government from actually making decisions.
Is the government not moving to that now anyway?
They're going the wrong direction. It's getting worse. The length of time, and this is the frustration that is there. There are people that are fleeing war and persecution who need support and protection and need to be integrated into society. They're entitled to claim asylum in this country. But unfortunately, they're a minority of the people who are claiming. The majority of people who are claiming at this point in time, I think the latest figures was about 2/3 of them, are not entitled to protection in this country, are supposed to be sent home safely to their own countries. But the problem here is that it's taking over 2.5 years from the time of application to the time of a final decision to make those decisions.
What would Sinn Féin do with people who have had their asylum claims rejected and then rejected on appeal?
They need to be returned home. It's very, very simple. Like, and that has to be done, you know, with dignity, with respect. We're talking about human beings here, but they do not have the right to stay in this country as a result of our immigration program here, and therefore they need to return home. And the problem, as I said, is that this is causing serious problems within our system, because in the middle of all of that, you have people who are fleeing war and persecution, who do need support, who are scarred as a result of where they're leaving and fleeing from, and they're in the middle of people who are not and won't be entitled when the decision is made. And then we have a system that is seriously under pressure in terms of capacity, and we've seen that with the visual demonstration of that, where people are in tents in our capital city and elsewhere.
Okay. Let's move on now to the recent by-elections. So Daniel Ennis from the Sock Dems won in Dublin Central. Like, that is your leader's Mary Lou McDonald's home turf. That is where she's strongest, her power base is. What do you think happened? What went wrong?
Yeah, well, look, it's always simple in terms of when you don't win an election. What went wrong is we didn't get enough votes. I think in terms of by-elections, they're always going to be difficult to win. We know that.
But they shouldn't be for the main opposition party, though, in a cost of living crisis.
No, well, I don't agree with that, because obviously you're not just looking for your own number one votes, which was the case in a general election. And, you know, the last election, many of the TDs that sit on the benches with me topped the poll in their constituencies, got elected in the first count, and that was it was great to see. But in by-elections, I don't think there's ever been a case, there may be one or two, where somebody actually received over 50%. So you actually are depending on people who vote for other political parties so to transfer into you.
The Sock Dems had a better candidate.
No, I mean they had a candidate that was more transfer friendly in relation to that constituency. There's no doubt about
that. That's a problem for you, isn't it?
Look. To me, Claire, that's natural. Like, you know, if I'm a Fine Gael voter, I will know that the biggest challenge to Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil being in government is Sinn Féin. So the last thing I will do is transfer to Sinn Féin. I will transfer to a smaller political party, to try and keep Sinn Féin out. Just, and that's not taken away from the candidate who won. Fair play to Daniel Ennis. He's an excellent candidate. He's obviously a good community activist. It's not taken away from him. Hmm. But that's just the way it is in any constituency.
Isn't it a problem for you, though, Piers, that you're... The other parties of the left are mistrustful of Sinn Féin, so they're reluctant to join in this alliance. You know, Holly Kern saying, oh, they have to work out some of their positions.
Let's be clear. There was never any talk about a formal alliance, you know, that we would be going in as a common platform in relation to that this is what we stand, this is what we will do in housing. That was never on the agenda. I think what the Catherine Connolly election showed is it gave people hope that for the first time in over 100 years that there is a possibility of a government without Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. We're very clear in relation to that. We are the lead opposition. We're far larger than any of the other political parties. We have 39 TDs.
Yeah, but you have to do business with the people on the left. So how do you get them on side? How do you iron out those policy issues that Holly Kearns has highlighted? She says you need to get your position straight on some things.
Well, look, and we would argue the same in relation to some of those parties. Like, it's not lost on us that when we stand up and challenge for, you know, cost of living supports in relation to the reduction of excise duties, that, you know, other parties on the left were not supportive of us. When we argue in relation to some of the supports that we want to see money back into people's pockets, we do not get the support from other political parties. But that's normal, Claire, because otherwise, if there wasn't differences, we'd all be one party. There is a difference there. So it's not about all of us being exactly the same. Sinn Féin is very proud of who we are. We're a United Ireland party. We want to see the end of British rule. We are a party of the left. We believe in equality. We believe in fairness, and we have a unique offering. And that's why in the last election, we actually got the support that we got, which is way bigger than any of the other political parties. But we do not take in any way that for granted.
But it must break your heart to be the bridesmaid all of the time. I mean, are you not sick of it now? How are you going to turn this tide? And is Mary Lou the person to lead you into government? Because it's not happening.
Well, listen, you know, the way I look at it like this here, when I got elected to the Dáil, and walked into Leinster House, there was four other Sinn Féin TDs. In every election that I've got elected in, and thanks to the people of Donegal who've re-elected me with higher numbers every time I walk into the Dáil, there are more Sinn Féin TDs there. Every single time. So I'm confident in relation to where we're going as a party, that we're continuing to grow our seats, that we have an ability to continue to go further. But I'm also not just about thinking about myself. I know that there's a huge, huge weight of responsibility on my shoulders, on Mary Lou's shoulders, and our full front bench, because there's people that we meet every single day, people with disabilities, people who can't find a house, that young generation that's reported in the papers today, that Gen Z generation who believe that they will not be able to afford a house in Ireland. Their hopes, their aspirations rest on our shoulders because they know that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are not going to deliver for them.
I want to talk to you about some of those policies.
So we have all of that on us. So yeah, so we need to do better. But I, you know, some people will like to paint us into a situation that our vote has collapsed like it did in Fianna Fáil or like Labour did after they
went into
government.
Well, there was a big poll drop, wasn't there, before the 2024 election? You were expected to do better.
In the 2020, yeah, we were higher in the polls and obviously we lost some of that support in the polls. But like we all know, in terms of elections, it's the election that matters. We were still obviously the largest party in terms of the polls at this point in time.
Tell me this. Do you want to lead the party?
I have no ambition to lead the party. I've said that from I don't know how many years now, and that's my I think Mary Lou is an excellent.
Why not though?
I hear this all the time from, you know, and I don't take away from anybody in other political parties, but I hear this all the time from other people in political parties saying that every TD aspires to lead the party.
Yeah.
I'm just never had that. I joined this party because I passionately believe in what I believe in. I am a Republican to the core. I really believe in the change that can happen in Ireland.
But you don't want
to
be the boss.
I would probably more comfortable, to tell you the truth, in the background. People who know me as a young person knows that sitting here talking to you or standing in the Dáil is not a comfortable space for me. It's not my natural space. So I'm somebody who would rather be behind the curtain than in front of the curtain.
It's not something I've ever...
It's a big statement to make
because if you say it, it's hard to reverse on it. So you're not sure that you don't want to lead the party?
Claire, it's just me being honest. That's who I am. But like I say that, I've been saying that for years. The reality is I am a member of the party's leadership. I'm the deputy leader in the Dáil. I work hand in glove with Mary Lou, who's absolutely an excellent leader of the party. I talked about the progress that we have made in terms of the number of seats. That has happened under the term of Gerry Adams and of Mary Lou. So
a powerful member of the party, but not an aspiring leader, but you'll be the kingmaker when the job does come up.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you're, you know, you're in the upper echelons, you don't want the gig, but you'll be the one who's probably helping with the manoeuvres whenever the job comes up.
Of course, myself and Mary Lou are part of a collective leadership here. And obviously when Mary Lou was off and, you know, I step into that role. Mm-hmm. I don't think, for me, it's not about who's the party president, who's the vice president. To tell you the truth, it is about what we can actually achieve. And I'm not really into the personalities in relation to that there. It's about how we're connecting with people. Are we explaining what we stand for properly?
Well, the leader in the Republic is an important job because that person could ultimately be the Taoiseach.
Of course, right?
Listen, let's talk about finance now. What's your position on tax cuts for workers? Firstly,
we've argued that there needs to be an emergency budget, and as part of that emergency budget, that has to be a reduction of tax cuts for workers. We believe that the USC should be abolished for the first €45,000 that everybody earns, but the first step in that should be putting €500 back into workers' pockets, and that should happen immediately. I think the government were wrong to leave workers worse off in last year's budget.
But people worry about how you're going to fund that. Even today we're reading that they're going to have to borrow to put money into those savings funds they've set up, things like the Future Ireland Fund and the Climate, the Infrastructure, Climate and Nature Fund, Social Insurance Fund, that they're going to have to find money from somewhere else, from borrowings, to put into that. So how do you fund all the stuff that you want to do?
Well, first of all, first of all, there's two things that are happening. If you listen to the NTMA, which borrows on behalf of the state and has done an excellent job for decades here, the reason they give for borrowing this money is to maintain the relationship with our funders. And that is important because at some stage you...
So we don't need to borrow it?
Well,
we're just doing it to keep them sweet.
We've €30 billion on hand in cash at this point in time in the NTMA. We're about to make a surplus of €9 billion this year, and we made €11.2 billion last year. In the last 5 years, the surpluses of the state was €50 billion. So we're in a position where we do not need to borrow for the day-to-day running of the country. We have money, we have billions of euro that we're not spending. That doesn't mean to say that you don't keep a relationship with your borrowers, because that can all change. We've seen in terms of a pandemic where businesses, people had to be supported and you actually had to borrow in that
case. When IFAC issues that warning about borrowing money to put into those savings funds, you're saying we don't actually need to borrow
the
bigger money.
The bigger issue here is that when I question the Minister for Finance and ask what's the returns he's likely to get for these savings, he's not able to tell me. So the question is why are we borrowing at, 3.6%, not knowing if we're investing and getting the return for 3.6%? If I was sitting down with you and you were doing that in home with your own finances, you'd be saying that's a wee bit mad. There's also a lot of other stuff that's going on within the department, within the ministry, which is crazy in my view. If we look at the AIB shares, over €7 billion sitting in deposit in the NTMA. You know, this is at the same time that the Minister for Finance is running about the country telling everybody that we need to be more productive with our savings, those of the country that has savings,
the investment,
and they need to get more money. But yet he's €7 billion sitting in a cash account for the last number of years, and it's not been invested at all, not getting any return, which means it's losing money for the state.
And are you concerned about Ireland's reliance on corporation tax?
Yes. Yeah, we have been for a long time in terms of the concentration and
because I think people see you as somebody who would be a splashy spender if you went in
no,
there.
These type of headlines don't do justice to the actual conversation we need to have. So, first of all, the exposure to and the concentration of our corporation tax is a serious risk. It always has been a serious risk. Thankfully, that risk hasn't materialised, and it's not suggested that it is going to materialise in the next while. The key thing that we argue is that what do you do with that type of revenue during this period? And what you do is you invest you make sure that you are in a stronger position, that when, if a downturn comes, or if those that concentration.
That's not what they're doing though with those funds. I mean, you're talking about increasing social welfare, having energy credits, cutting taxes.
The first of all, those funds are not being invested. They're not being invested in the likes of housing, and most of that fund is not. You're not going to see that.
The government is spending over $11 billion on housing, isn't it, this year?
First of all, in relation to, so half of that, over half of that won't be in terms of new build, and some of that is like social housing, upkeep, maintenance, and so on and so forth. So again, the government, put out figures like that. But let's look at the output. Social and affordable housing are way off the mark and where we need to be. And again, the government misses the mark. We've showed how you can actually double the level of investment there to build the social and affordable houses that you need. But I want to go back to the spending thing, if you don't mind, Claire, because see, if you look at the facts of it, we have an economy that is, like, across Europe, our economies are measured by GDP. We don't measure our economy by GDP because we've got the multinational factors that distort that. So we used a new measurement ourselves in the country called GNI Star, and it strips out the multinational effect. When we compare our spending to European spending, we are actually bottom of the class in terms of Western Europe. When we compare it across the European Union, I think there's only three other countries, Malta and a few others, that have less spending than us. The other statistic that would actually people wouldn't believe is that in the last 10 years, our proportion of spending has not increased as a proportion of GNI Star, even though the myth out there is that we've lost the run of ourselves in terms of spending. And the reason I say that is because when somebody is phoning me or coming into my constituency office and they're telling me that their mother was in a trolley for 23 hours last night in A&E, it is because of those statistics, because we are failing to invest properly in the areas which needed to be invested. When people are telling me that childcare is like a second mortgage to them and that they're disappointed that the government's promise that hasn't materialised, again, it is because of our lack of investment in relation to core public services. So it is really important that we understand where our economy is.
We have IFAC warning us all the time about spending, about not adhering to our own rules when it comes to spending. So are IFAC wrong? The watchdog?
IFAC have a particular role in it, and IFAC keep on talking about rules of the country. There is no rule in terms of spending, by the way, in terms of European Union, or sorry, there is in terms of as a proportion of a deficit, but we're so far away from that, we're not anywhere near of breaching that rule. But this is a government's rule they're talking about in terms of how much spending that the government is planning in any given year. And the government, since they introduced that, 5 years ago, never met that once.
Yeah.
Like, some of this is just kind of hot air from the government in terms of trying to present themselves as prudent and then again trying to package Sinn Féin as something different. Listen, but we make no bones about it. We will actually invest, and that investment is absolutely crucial for the economy and for people's welfare.
I want to talk to you about housing because we've just touched on it there. And I remember in the run-up to the last election, you promised to end the Help to Buy scheme and the First Home scheme. But there were tens of thousands of people who were invested in getting money from those schemes, who had already applied. They were really worried about that commitment. Do you think now, in retrospect, that there was a mistake to say that?
No. So, first of all, we didn't say that we were going to pull down the shutters immediately in terms of the Help to Buy scheme. What we were saying is actually that the first thing we needed to do in terms of the Help to Buy scheme is we need to increase the ratio of borrowing that people require to actually avail of it, which means that
part of your big housing plan was that ultimately
I think it was over a period of about 5 or 6 years.
But do you accept that it scared people?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth, because I think the key thing here is that, like, if you look at this here, I was talking to a young couple in Galway, and they were telling me that they're on the housing waiting list. They've been saving for the last 2 years and moved into their family room and all that to save on rent, and they were getting the deposit, and house prices went up 10%. That meant house prices went up something like 36,000 in that region in a year. The Help to Buy is 30,000. The average Help to Buy that people draw down is less than that.
People always suspect, isn't it, that those schemes do drive up the price.
It's Like, there's no report after report after report that actually say that it is driving up prices. But even the problem here is, since the government introduced Help to Buy, house prices have gone through the roof, and there is no stop, isn't it? And the government doesn't have a plan to actually deal with that.
There was another proposal you had around affordable homes, where you would bring down the price of them by around 100,000, but the people who bought them wouldn't own the land under them. And it just sounded a bit mad back at the time.
Anybody who lives in an apartment is exactly in that situation. If you look at the government's affordable home scheme, the shared equity scheme, you don't own the house under the government's. You actually don't own the house. Forget about even the land. You don't own the house. 20% of the house is owned by the state. And again, it's about, you know, it's about how we articulate that, how we explain that and all the rest. But, you know, I didn't hear the media going hell for leather in relation to the government that you're bringing in a scheme that is what? You don't own the house at the end of the day? You know,
Questions over whether mortgages would be granted in that situation.
Yeah. And mortgages are granted in relation to apartments, and you know I have no doubt that mortgages can be granted in relation to that. Look, a job of government is to try and create doubt and all the rest. And the biggest thing, forget about housing at the minute, the biggest job of this government when it comes to actually maintaining the status quo, making sure that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael continue to run this country as they've had for the last 100 years, is to create the impression that change is not possible or that change doesn't exist. But change is possible. I absolutely know. I passionately believe in what we stand for. I know that if we get a crack at being in government, that we can actually deliver real change for the government. And that's the scary thing for government. And that's why, you know, going back to the by-election, why government do not want to see the growth of Sinn Féin. Look, you know, they know in terms of other smaller parties in the past, they've gone in and they've given, you know, cover to those larger parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in government. Sinn Féin is a vehicle that can actually replace Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in government. Well, and that's the real challenge.
One last question for you. We've been talking about the Friedrichs ataxia drugs, Guy Claris, on the programme for the last week or so. I know there was a protest. We heard about it from Emily Felix outside the Dáil last night, and Mary Lou McDonald met those people. What do you say should happen?
I think this drug has to be made available, and it has to be made available very, very quickly. As you said, Mary Lou met a number of these people, and, you know, it is painful to families when they know that a drug is there that can enhance their quality of life, that there is no other option for people, and that it is available in other European jurisdictions, and that we are really dragging our feet. And this goes beyond this drug. Today, the drugs group is meeting. We understand this drug is not on the agenda.
Seems that way,
But juvenostat is hopefully on the agenda. And I know, like, two children from my own constituency have met Aaron and Jeremy in Ballybuffet. And, like, they need this drug approved. It's approved in the north. It's approved in Britain. It's approved right throughout Europe. It's approved by the EPA last year. And there's a problem here. If you look at what's happening in Europe, it takes only a number of months for them to approve a drug in Europe and to agree reimbursement. Here in this state, it takes a lot longer. So we have a situation, and this goes to the core of this, because we can talk about drugs and groups and process and all the rest. There's a young family in Ballybuffet. Jeremy is the young lad, and he needs this drug. He needs this drug to be able to make sure that he's got Duchenne muscular dystrophy, that he can continue to walk, to slow down the challenges that he has. His brother was in a trial. His brother's in his 20s. His brother was in a trial in Britain. His brother gets that drug every day. The mother goes into the fridge, takes the vial out for the older brother, but the young fella who needs this drug, there's no vial for him because it's not approved there. That is heartbreaking for any parent. That parent feels that they're letting their child down. They're not letting their child down. The state is letting their child down. And these drugs need to be approved. In my view, they have to get good value for money. But the big issue here is it's taken far too long to make decisions.
Okay. Listen, we'll leave it there. Piers Doherty, thank you for coming in.
Thank you,
that is the Sinn Féin deputy leader in the Dáil and finance spokesperson, also TD for Donegal. We'll take a break back after this.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.